So, where do we go from here? Do you want to play a good game book?
Yes.
Okay. So, I didn't know if we were going to do this or not, but apparently we are.
Woo!
We did not get far in that adventure.
We have dice! We didn't read any rules. Oh, shoot, were we supposed to read those rules?
There's nothing to them. There are four pages, and one page is bonus rules.
Okay. Well, we didn't read them, so.
What denomination of die do we need?
Six-sided.
You just need six-sided dice. I think you'll want six. I guess I should introduce that this is a introductory solo adventure written by S. John Ross for his free role-playing rules, Rhesus, the Anything RPG. You can download those for free.
And apparently we don't need to read them, so.
Well, you won't.
Yeah.
There is a buttload of supplementary material you can get on the web, though, if you actually want to run a full-scale campaign.
Mm.
Like 90-something page source books for various countries and stuff. It's actually kind of cool how much of a community sprung up around it for such a simple game.
Cool.
So, now I have to determine how we're going to play this. Either you both can control one character, or I can split up the stats between you and you can play two different people.
I feel like we should just be one character for simplicity.
Okay, so you are going to be Lucas Marks, a halfling rogue, mercenary, and partner in crime with Patricia Meadows, a 22-year-old human adventuress. By the way, people, you can get this Ring of Thieves adventure for free if you want to play through by yourself.
Hmm.
Part of the reason why I can run this and actually read the flavor text. Because it's all Creative Commons.
Yay! Creative Commons!
So your unlikely association began in the city of Chamlek, where you tried to pick each other's pockets.
At the same time?
Love at first sight.
Or at first grope, as likely happened in that case.
And this story begins in the great northern city of Hultog in the middle of winter. You just arrived a week ago, and you were looking for a source of new revenue, but a blizzard came in, and you're stuck here.
Wait, we just arrived a week ago, so we didn't just arrive at all.
We didn't just arrive. You arrived just weeks ago.
Oh.
And it's not going very well for you, but you're trapped here because of the blizzards that have pulled in and plugged up the passes.
Yep.
So while you were perusing the Dockside Curiosity Shop, you were ambushed by five men with identical gray cloaks. You were prepared to run for it, but Patricia was feeling testy that day. And she leapt on them, and a grim melee followed. She killed two of the gray suits. You killed one, and the last one ran for dear life.
Cool.
We're pretty badass for a halfling.
Yeah, so you picked up their purses that were vacated, obviously, finders keepers. You had a celebratory supper at the Cup and Talon. Examine your spoils, and while you were looking through the treasure, you saw that amidst all the coins, there was a magical ring. It's a band of brass that glows kind of with a purpley radiance.
Mm.
You're wondering why this group of thieves sprang on you when they clearly had a good run already.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was one of those last one more for the day kind of things.
Yeah.
So you spend all the coin getting drunk.
Oh, wow, we have no self-control.
You definitely don't.
Yeah.
You spend a little bit to get a bed for the night. You tuck the ring in your shoe, and you both settle into your beds for a well-deserved rest.
Let's crash the house.
So, again, you're playing Lucas Marks. You'll need to get out a pad of paper because I'm about to give you your stats. There's not much to this. You're a fun-loving mercenary.
Mm-hmm.
That has three dice for that one.
Oh, fun-loving mercenary is three, okay. Yeah.
Halfling burglar is four dice.
Okay.
Ladies man is two dice.
Ladies
man is two.
Two dice, okay.
And outrageous storyteller is two.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Your hook is that you're rotten with anything mechanical, so you're going to operate with half dice when you're dealing with locks and traps.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And that's really it.
All right.
I mean, the only important item you have is a gold coin that's enchanted to shine in the dark.
And this ring.
Yeah, and the ring that you have tucked in your shoe. There are options to customize the character, but we're not familiar with that. I am going to be playing these with slightly modified rules from the what's actually in the Rhesus rulebook, because playing through this the first time, there's one bit where you'll get bottlenecked and die instantly if we don't change them. So, what else? You have three lucky shots, so mark that down. This means that for any die roll in the game, you can add one die, and you can do that three times.
Okay, but it's for the entire game, and then they expire. Yeah. Okay.
Let us begin.
All right.
So you wake up, and the first thing you notice is there's an open window in your room.
You know what this story has that the books didn't? Pacing.
You see outside that there's a few snowflakes drifting silently and spookily.
That's spooky.
The second thing you notice is that Patricia's gone.
Out the window, I'm guessing.
Her bed's empty, and she doesn't normally sleep with the window open.
Yep, out the window. Okay, cool.
So you sit bolt upright.
And
but
hit
then
our
you
head.
Meet a wave of nausea, and you collapse back onto the bed.
Shouldn't have eaten those burritos.
Here's what you know. The bed is empty. Trisha's gone. Your head hurts. The window's open.
All right.
So,
you
got to get out of the worst hangover of your life. You can use either your ladies' man or fun-loving mercenary cliche to get over the hangover. Choose one.
I feel like fun-loving mercenary.
Yeah.
It's more appropriate. You want to roll?
Okay, we rolled a 5, a 3, and a 1.
Add them together.
9.
You almost got out of that hangover, but not quite. You try to stand, but the waves of sickness knock you back on your pillow.
Yep.
You feel sleep is threatening you.
Ah, sleep! No, get away!
But you crawl out of bed and are able to get onto the floor and slowly get into a standing position.
Now this is like a bad movie. This whole part is like,
So now that you're up, you can see that the room's a wreck. There's debris scattered everywhere, all of your professional gear, and you can tell that it's being ransacked.
Can we vomit? Will that make us feel better?
In an actual Rhesus game, you probably could.
Mm.
But since we're playing through the solo adventure, no.
Okay, ransacked.
So you're able to shake off the sickness. Under the bed, you find a tiny glass vial that's empty, but there's still a little bit of yellow fluid in it.
Ew.
And when you sniff at it, the stench is terrible. You feel like throwing up after getting a whiff of that, and you run over to the window and take in gulps of air just to clear that out of your nose.
I have suspicions.
So after getting back into the room, you look at the bottle, you tip it on its side, and you see that someone has carelessly left a label on it. Grimray's Apothecary and Potion House, number 15 Short Alley. Price is reasonable, safety assured.
Well, I know where we're going.
So now we're told if you've read the note on the windowsill, which you haven't, so you have to take the next choice.
Yep. Ah, this is exciting stuff.
So you can tell that there was some foul alchemy, and suddenly you remember the ring, so you get your left shoe and shake it out, and the ring falls to the floor. So your ring is safe. You clearly think that the people who ransacked your room were probably going after the ring. So now you wonder if there might be an organized band, but you know that there isn't a thieves' guild here, because you would have met them by now.
If it's anything like in Discworld, we would have had to go through a series of paperwork just to be able to steal here.
Yay, bureaucracy.
Yay.
You gather up your stuff, and you notice despite the fact that they've ransacked everything, they've left your belongings too. Choices right now is that because you see that the window's open, you could go out there and scout out to see if they left a trail, or you can go to the tavern to get some leads.
Tavern.
I think we need a drink to get over that hangover, yeah.
All right. Over to the tavern.
Yep. This feels like the less useful thing to do, so let's do it.
So off you go, back into the Cup and Talon. You see that there's mostly sailors and craftsmen here. It's early enough in the morning that there actually isn't that many in for breakfast just yet.
Ooh, they do breakfast.
You try and see if there's any men in gray suits.
Suits or cloaks?
Only three people really capture your interest. There's an old sailor who's running a game of fortune at the center table, another halfling who's sitting on a bar stool counting money, and a tall man in gray robes who's sitting alone by the windows. So, which one do you talk to?
Gray robes?
Is that too obvious?
Yes, which is why it's the best place to start.
Because your choices always work.
Hey, you're the one who wanted to confront the animal last time.
Yeah, because I wanted us to die. I don't think the sailor. But we could talk to the halfling, have like a yo-yo halfling bro kind of thing going on.
Sure, let's do that then.
Okay, you're talking to the halfling?
He'll probably just tell us to buzz off, but yeah.
So you're like, well, he's one of my own. He'll clearly talk to strangers. You approach, and then you wish you hadn't, because the halfling turns around, and he's like, Lucas, my old chum, my lifelong friend, how are you? And your smile fades from your face. And you're like, what are you doing here? And this is Joseph Kettlebroth, who you have wanted to punch in the mouth for a really long time. You thought that you lost him on your last adventure near Castaban, but clearly he has come back to the same city. And you're like, are you following me? Or do we just think alike? And he goes, I could ask the same of you, Fred Lucas. I remember just a season ago on the lands west of Castaban, wasn't it? When Patricia and yourself tried to take what was my own legitimate find?
Yeah, yeah, ha ha ha, ha ha ha.
Ah, yes, good times.
You're trying to disentangle yourself from this conversation, but he's not having any of it. And he's like, so, where's Patricia? Hey, your lovely if gigantic partner?
I don't know.
She's doing just fine, thanks. And you're able to disappear into the crowd, and Joseph lets out an offended hump.
Let's go talk to the guy in the gray robes now. That was hilarious, though.
It was pretty good.
So you wander through the tavern some more and have a look about. You have enough time to visit one more person before you kind of get tired here.
Gray robes.
So
gray robes. Yeah.
It is common knowledge among adventurers that those with knowledge sit in taverns alone, usually with cowls over their heads and deep, mysterious voices.
I love the fourth walliness of that.
When in doubt, yeah.
So you kind of move your way around to the bar and you get a small mug of beer. And the halfling gives a slur at the request, so probably not a nice man. And you act like there's only one seat in the tavern. You plop yourself beside the tall-robed fellow. But the tall-robed fellow isn't a fellow at all. She's a woman, and she's obviously blind.
Cool.
But she does feel your presence, and she says, hello? So you look at her a moment, and you're like, she just seems harmless. So you can apologize and excuse yourself, or you can speak to her anyway.
Well, it's Doctor. She's probably a seer or something, if she's blind.
Which is appropriate, because we just started watching Daredevil last night.
It's really good.
It is really good.
I really wish, I was saying to Cora earlier, that I really wish they'd have things like the Fantastic Four fighting a monster just go by in the background, and like have nothing to do with this story, just to make it feel a little more Marvel Universe-y, but it's a good, I'm enjoying it.
So you say hello to her, and you introduce yourself. Her name's Mira, she's a potter who operates in a shop on the street down from here.
She's basically analog clay shaper.
She sits by the window because she can feel the sunbeam.
I thought there was a storm and there were, like, sinister snowflakes earlier.
You saw a few solitary snowflakes. I assume it's cleared up a bit. But
okay.
Because we're later in the morning.
Yeah. Plus, the writing isn't
so you ask her about the gray robe men, and surprisingly, she has an answer for you.
Yeah?
She says, there's some dudes organizing a ring. They're going to start a guild for the City of Thieves. Why do you want to contact them? So, your choice is you can lie and say that you're interested in joining the thieves, or you can tell her the truth.
Hmm.
Let's lie.
Would a potter be receptive to thieves?
She did know about them.
Yeah, that's like, hey, I'm way less bored with this game, so... It's kind of neat that you can do solo adventures, actually.
So, you explain that you're a thief of some skill and experience and are interested in adding your talent to theirs. The woman smiles at you and goes, well, you sound confident enough. I think we actually missed a rule there.
Oh. Am I supposed to ladies man that or something?
Yeah. Oh, well, I can't. I don't know where I came from. So
okay.
This is
okay.
A freebie.
All right.
You succeeded in your deception, and she tells you that there's an inn called the Iron Keel on Quayside Street.
Quayside Street.
Quayside.
Quayside.
I can't talk today. So you're going to the Iron Keel on Quayside Street near the docks, and you have to ask the barkeep to see William. Mm-hmm. The password to the lamp door is Rakarva, and they'll tend to you there.
All right.
Yes, the Den of Thieves! But she also tells you, be prepared for everything. So, because you talked to two people, you decided it's time to leave the tavern.
Yes.
Brace yourself for the cold winter air, and as you walk towards the tavern door, a voice suddenly stops you. Halfling! You whirl around, but you don't see anybody there.
Cool.
Is it madness? Is it delusion? Is it sorcery?
Yes.
And you're, whenever put to the test, you usually blame sorcery. But who would cast a spell like that on you just to annoy you? Lucas! The voice returns. You look down and you see that the ring in your pocket is shining with a sickly purple radiance. So you cover the light with your hand, open the door, step out into the street, slip briefly in the ice, and then hurry to a nearby alley to examine this problem in private. The ring is still glowing, and standing on top of the metal surface is a tiny winged creature formed of that same purple light. It's got both its hands on its hips, and is staring at you impatiently.
This is interesting.
What are you? You demand. Eddie tells you, I'm Zim! Or Shim. There's an X at the beginning. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Probably Zim.
All right. The spirit that dwells within this ring. And he bows. I'm the most powerful of the ring spirits and protector of any who possesses the ring. I'm also the sworn foe of the Red Djinn. And then he bows again and gives a little flourish.
I kind of like him, even though I think he's a huge asshole.
So you're like, well, obviously this is why those guys in... It actually says gray suits. They're not cloaks, they're suits.
I just have this image of them being, like, businessmen in this fantasy realm. That's awesome.
So it's clear now why they were so keen on getting that ring back. And Zim says, put me on your finger! And you shake your head. They say it's not very smart to sneak around with a glowing ring on your finger. Halflings know this, just intuitively. Zim is still grinning at you, and you're like, no, I can't trust you. He says, then I can't protect you. And you tell him, I've done fine so far. And Zim says, clearly not, because Patricia's gone.
The banter.
That's good.
And he says, I know you have feelings for her, too. And you're like, but we're just partners. I assure you, that's it. And Shim says, but I can change that, Lucas. You know you want me to.
I
know where this is going. So you shove the ring back into your pocket and go, what a foul, manipulative little creature. You have a partner to rescue.
Put me on your finger. It does sound a little dirty, though. Out of context.
So you reflect on this revelation of this magic ring, and you now know that these gray-suited thieves are dealing in black magic.
Dun-dun-dun!
You wonder who this Red Djinn is, though, that he mentioned.
It's a Red Djinn.
You're about to ask him again, but when you pull the ring out, the glow is faded and there's no spirit sitting on top.
He's doing a fuck you kind of thing, I guess.
So your primary lead right now is Grim Ray, the alchemist who made the knockout gas. However, if you received any information about going-ons at the docks or Quayside, that's a second option. So you can either go to the alchemist, or you can go to the docks.
No,
It was tavern we received information on, I thought.
The Quayside is...
Yeah, the tavern's at the Quayside where the docks are.
I kind of want to go to the alchemist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, so you're going to follow up with the alchemist.
Just tidy up this bit before we check out that other person.
So you head in the direction of Short Alley, which is a winding, filthy road that connects to the east side of Quayside Street. It's not really an alley. It's wide enough for horses to go in double file. That's just a detail that you should know.
That's an adorable detail, though.
There are some poor burghers who live here.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that the crowds here are sparse. There's some icicles. You slip by two city watchmen who are patrolling the area on horseback.
But we don't slip.
And you finally come before a two-story wooden building, which has a sign swinging over the door. Grimray's Apothecary and Potion House, number 15 Short Alley. And beneath it is painted the picture of a smoking vial, clearly intended for the illiterate masses.
All right, let's go in.
Right, here you go. 58. Push open the doors and a tiny bell announces your arrival. So it looks like how you would expect an apothecary to look like. There's jars of everything everywhere. There's like a stuffed alligator hanging off the ceiling. You know.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Just some bubbling things.
An ancient, withered man is sitting quietly behind a lamp, and he goes, "Sir, how may I help you?"
"Who'd you sell this to?"
And you say, "I'm looking for the alchemist who made this." And
yay.
Put the love vial before the lamp. And he says, "I made it. Was its performance unsatisfactory?"
"Nope."
Tell him, "It worked well, but it was used against me." So he rises out of his seat and he says, "I'm not responsible for the uses to which my art is put." And you say, "No, I'm not trying to get a refund or anything. I just wanted to know about the gentleman to whom you sold this.
Mm-hmm.
I can meet with them, since we're alike in profession. This guy seems to be involved with the Ring of Thieves as well, because he's like, 'You're seeking allegiance then?'"
And you yep.
go, "Sure."
"Why not?"
"Yeah.
They are regular customers of mine. I like doing business with them."
"Yeah, they probably pay you, so I think so."
"They're asking me constantly if I know of any new recruits, and I'm always willing to help my customers. Of course, I must be certain of your sincerity."
"All right.
Make a roll with your outrageous storyteller cliche."
"Ooh, that's only 2. Oh, we failed.
We got a 4.
So you square your shoulders and try and get your voice down. You go, "Would you call me a liar, alchemist?" Eddie bursts out laughing.
"Yeah, well, could have been worse."
"I see," he says. "You were kidding. Such wit." And there goes your chance of getting any further information out of this guy.
"That's okay.
Are you here to purchase something, then? I have some healing drafts and a protective elixir that I made myself."
"Do we have any money? Oh, wait, we have..."
"Yes, you do have some money."
"Okay.
So you can either buy the healing potion, buy the protective elixir, or decide that you don't really trust this alchemist and don't buy either."
"What's the protective elixir, exactly?"
"He just said he made it himself." "And you only have enough money to buy one."
"What do you think? We'll probably have to do some thieves trials or some junk."
"Yeah. I don't know if I trust the alchemist, to be honest."
"Yeah, things seem to work."
"Healing potion, maybe?"
"Yeah, let's do the healing potion."
So he snatches up your gold like a greedy child and gives you this quote-unquote healing potion.
Yeah, quote-unquote.
It's a tiny glass filled with blue liquid and there's tiny white lumps in it. You feel sick at the thought of drinking it, but basically you'll need to write this down. If you drink this potion when you're not in combat, you're going to heal one of your cliches up to its normal score. There's only one dose. It is possible to lose dice in your cliches in this game.
Okay. When not in combat.
Yeah. You thank the alchemist and leave the shop.
See, at least it works.
You notice that there's nobody around, though, and there's complete silence.
That means there's loads of people around, and they're watching us.
Feeling suspicious, you start walking swiftly through the alleyways, and you decide to pull the ring out again, and there's Zim.
Mm-hmm.
And he rises out of the ring and taps his foot a little bit petulantly and goes, "Lucas, be reasonable. I don't want to be returned to the hands of those men." And you're like, "I really don't trust you." And Zim goes, "No, Lucas, I'm sorry for what I said earlier." And he does a palms forward expression, an apology, and goes, "I sought to control you in order to return to the thieves and wipe out that red djinn."
Ah, so we should totally trust him now.
Yeah. So you now know that he's lied to you at least once.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it, but make it quick. I got a partner to rescue. So Zim was originally the property of a powerful Malish sorcerer who was very close to his Imperial Majesty Vestiles IV. I was stolen because my kind are the foes of the Red Djinn. They are terrible, deadly spirits, powerful and corrupt. And his kind exists to keep that sort of djinn in check.
Mm-hmm.
So you ask him, well, how does the Ring of Thieves come into this? The thieves have a sorcerer in their employ. He summoned up the red genie to serve him.
Mm-hmm.
It has considerable power. They're using it to control the minds of some important men.
Mm-hmm.
But they're losing control of it, so they killed his master so that they could use the ring to gain control over the red genie.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about this, and you're like, well, I've heard weirder things in this fantasy world of ours. And this makes about as much sense as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I understand, Lucas. I regret my former haste, but you are a person of considerable resources. I think you can get us to our goal on your own. We'll work together, but independently of each other's control, as partners. I've got one, you say. And he goes, well, if you need help, you can summon me. And then he disappears back into the ring. Right, so you're striding along the alleyways, but the trip is short. Just as you're going through the shortcut behind the Cup and Talon, four men dressed in gray robes and wielding daggers drop out from the rooftops like ninjas. The leader smiles at you and he goes, there it is! Kill it! Fortunately, you're in a narrow alley, so only two of them can fight you at once.
Okay.
Like ninjas, they are going to attack you individually. As soon as one goes down, the next will take his place.
Okay.
You're stuck using your fun-loving mercenary cliche. This is where I'm changing the rules, so instead of rolling a total, you only keep your even dice, and each even die counts as one hit.
Okay.
Right. So first you are facing Nameless Thug number one.
Wow.
Nothing.
Okay, take off one die. He wounds you. Next roll.
Oh, look, a six.
All right, he also got an even, so we need to roll again. You parry each other.
This is hilarious. A six and a two.
All right, you hit him.
Yay.
And that one's dead. The next one comes to take his place. I'm going to let you take a healing draft while he does that.
Use up our thing?
Want to. Yeah, and remember that you have lucky shots, because the next guy you're facing has two dice.
Hmm. Okay, so our potion's gone?
If you've restored your lost die, then yes.
Yeah, okay. Our potion's gone. We went, drink, oh, and no.
All right, so you square off against Nameless Thug number two.
Should we use a lucky shot? No, we should be okay, actually.
Yeah.
You got four dice, right?
Yeah. For fun-loving merc?
Three?
No, we have three.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a four and a two.
So you got two hits. He got zero, so he's down to one die.
Mm-hmm.
So you stab him, and he staggers back with blood splurting out from his guts, but he's still got a little bit of fight.
If we got two hits, shouldn't he be dead?
No, because he got one.
No, you only go down one hit at a time.
Uh-huh.
It just reduces him by one die.
I got one even.
Okay, he got a zero, so you chop off his head. He falls to the ground, and now you're facing thug named Otis.
He has a name?
Yes, the third one is thug named Otis. He's got three, so you're evenly matched.
We got one.
You got two, you're down one die.
Now we should probably use a lucky shot.
Yeah.
So we're using one of our lucky shots.
Okay.
God damn it. nothing.
You got nothing as well.
Oh, okay. So the lucky shot only goes for that one roll, or does it stay?
Yep, just the one roll. Are you going to use another one?
No, we got one.
Okay. You got one.
That was fun. We got two.
All right, you hit him. He comes down to two dice.
You're even aha!
Match now.
We got two.
You got zero.
Ha!
Down to one die.
We got one.
You got one. So you parry each other.
Ching! Oh, we got two.
And you got zero. So Otis is dead.
Yay!
All dead.
Ha! Dice rolling.
So you fight like mad. The thought of Patricia providing ample inspiration.
Patricia!
Rapid succession. Blood spatters across your face. And the last one is standing there. He drops his weapon and runs away. So off you go, running after him, and he ducks into an alley, and you scramble into the alley, but the alley's empty.
Mm.
There are three possible exits. One leads north to a dead end and a climb of wall. Another one leads west to an open window. And a third twists away to the east. Those are your choices.
Alleyway. Let's do the alleyway.
It's heavily iced and you have trouble running along, so you have to grab the walls on occasions. And you hit a dead end. You search for secret openings, but there's nothing there. So cursing, you go back to try another route. So now your choices are the dead end to the north or the windows to the west.
Windows?
Windows, yeah, let's do windows.
All right. So you approach it. You see there's a flapping curtain coming out of it. You peer inside, and soft light and sound assails your senses as you stare in shock as you see a woman, two men, and a schnauzer gently caressing a... Oops, you've stumbled into a brothel. Red-faced, you back out to try another route.
All right, let's try the other one then. That's hilarious. And a schnauzer.
So that leaves the dead end to the north. So that was actually a choice without a... A choice that wasn't actually a choice, but...
Well, unless it has something to do with how much time it takes for us to follow him.
You run north, and you look at the open street beyond. If he climbed the wall, then he's lost, because he vaulted up to see. But then you notice that under the trash you're standing in, there's a source of warm air and steam that's rising upwards. A trap door!
Mm.
It takes you a while to brush away the trash, but you find the latch. It's not locked. So you open it up, and you look in. These are the sewers. There's an iron ladder leading down, and you can hear receding footsteps. You draw out your magic light coin.
Handy.
And you go down into the sewers. You've entered a square chamber. The roof is only a foot or so above your head. A human would have to crouch or kneel here, but fortunately you don't.
Huh.
And you see many exits, but most of them are so small that not even a rat could get through.
Hmm.
So you go towards one of the halfling-sized holes in the wall when you hear the sound of running footsteps down the largest passageway.
This dude's a human, isn't he?
The guy you're pursuing? Yes.
Okay.
You can't tell whether they're running towards or away from you, so you can pursue the sound or go your own way.
Yeah, let's pursue the sound. What do you think?
Right.
Sure. Yeah, pursue the sound.
You climb into the large tunnel and begin to run down it. You continue, but you're pretty sure that the footsteps are coming from this direction. And they're walking now, not running. You think for a moment to call out hello, but think better about
that. Yeah, that's a dumb idea.
And now that you're closer, it sounds like there's more than one set of footsteps, and some are scraping along in an unpleasant manner. You try to look around in your circle of dim light, but you can't see anything out from a few steps ahead of you. But
they
you
can
do start. The footsteps have stopped, and you do hear breathing.
They so can see us.
You can enter the room and shine a light on whatever's there, or you can decide to. Run away, run away, run away, scrambling fearfully.
I kind of want to run away, scrambling fearfully. What about you?
Sure.
Okay.
So you enter a smaller tunnel, and now you've entered an active sewer line.
Overhead,
and you see that there is a corpse floating below, a gray-cloaked corpse. It's about 10 feet away. Its arms dangling over the edge of the walkway in the murky stream. The head looks twisted at a painful angle from the shoulders.
Yeah.
You edge closer, and you're sure this is the gray-suited thief. Mm-hmm. Or at least one of the gray-suited thieves that you've been fighting all day. But you didn't kill him, clearly.
Nope. Somebody almost twisted his head off, though.
You draw your sword, and you poke the body until it rolls over. A dirty piece of parchment falls out from his cloak. You knock that away from the corpse and pick it up. It's a map of the sewer network.
Handy.
You don't know how complete it is, but you know it'll be useful, so you pocket it away. You look at the face, and you recognize it as the very same person you were chasing when you entered the sewers.
Mm-hmm.
That was less than an hour ago.
But I was just talking to him, and he's dead?
Right, so you lean over the corpse to get a better idea of what killed it. You don't see any wounds, there's no blood stains, he wasn't stabbed, he wasn't beaten. Then you see that his neck is punctured neatly in two places.
Oh, vampire.
And now that you looked at his pasty white skin, you're sure there is absolutely no blood left in his body.
Yep.
You decide it's best to move on.
Yes.
You duck into a small alcove and you open up the map. It's dirty and smudged, but you can still read it. And you notice that there's been additions made over the years. So you have maps of both the old and new sewers kind of over each other.
Neat. There may be some slight sounds that the listeners can hear. It's us fanning ourselves with our internet cable bills, because it's really hot here.
You note that there are lines marked on the map showing the various grates, and one important-looking mark right near the middle. It looks like a glyph. You have no idea what it means. And you do the whole turning the paper sideways, upside down, but you're sure it's not pictographic. And before you can reflect further, purple light appears on the floor, and you jump, and you hit your head on the low ceiling. Fortunately, it's just Zim.
Yeah.
Being a doofus again.
Yeah.
The red genie! It shouts with a shrill squeak, and is dancing all happily, and going, "That's where they've taken that woman, Patricia, and where I have to go." So you ask him what the glyph, if he's talking about the glyph. He's like, "Yes!" He leaps from the ring in ecstasy, but then he's sharply yanked back onto the ring by some unseen force. Right now, you do not like the look in his eyes. And he tells you, "Lucas," seeing that you're suspicious, "had I truly wished to control you, I could have by now. I'm not entirely powerless, you know." And you're like, "You said I had to wear you." And he says, "I said you had to wear me to be protected." And then you're like, "All right, what's the best route towards this genie place? There's a lot of markings, they could be traps, guardians, anything." Zim looks over the map for a bit, and then he points to a single narrow passage and goes, "This way will be the safest. Because it has the fewest markings." There you go, that's the best you can do? And he's like, "Would you have decided differently? Neither of us can read the symbols on the map." You nod, and you sigh, and you go, "Well, okay, he's right."
Yeah. There's something really Discworldy about that, about our exchanges with Zim.
So you carefully follow the lines on the map, and you've come to an abandoned sewer line. There are the artistic efforts of hundreds of rogues and vagrants on the walls. Hideous fates, where the best pickings are, etc., etc. They all seem to be over 100 years old.
Hmm.
So you wander around for about an hour, and you come to a fork, and you notice that on the map, this fork is smudged. You can either go to the left tunnel or the right tunnel.
And we get no indications they look the same?
Nope. They have an equal number of markings on the map, as you can tell from what would lead out from that place. So you'd best just pick one. It's late afternoon. You don't think you have that much time.
Right?
Left?
Okay, let's go left.
Left. All right.
Left is right and right is wrong. I don't know.
And you're going along, checking the map, and it seems less accurate by the minute. Everything looks the same. You take another step forward after doing this a while, and you hear a click.
Shit.
And you hear Zim saying, "Ah, me, pressure plate trap. I hate those, don't you?" You hear a terrible grinding noise from all around you, but you have yet to move your foot from the shifting flagstone. So you can keep your foot on the plate, leap forward, or leap backward.
What would they expect a person to do?
Probably backwards.
Maybe we should leap forwards?
Okay.
Into the trap! Squish!
Clutching your Litecoin and map tightly, you kneel, close your eyes, and leap. The ceiling above the plate comes down with a solid block of stone heavy enough to crush a house. And there's more ceiling following it. So you can either roll your halfling burglar or fun-loving mercenary dice. I can tell you right now, fun-loving mercenary has a higher difficulty.
Also, we only have two dice there, and halfling burglar's got four.
All right.
So, let's do this.
Total it up.
10, 15.
You hit the floor painfully as a spray of rock and earth flies over your head. So you wait there and you hear the thunder of crashing stone, and then that fades, the echoes fade, and finally you rise, brushing yourself off. You're pretty sure that the gray suits did not place that trap. You've heard rumors of large tunnel network beneath the city, but you have no idea why the mayors would have built them. So it's possible that they're older. You want to reflect further on this, but you have a partner to rescue.
Yes, we do. She's probably like, where the frig is he?
After another half hour of walking, you don't come across any difficulties, even though the map shows that you've passed a lot of stuff. Again, you can't read the markings, so you don't know what that was. And if the map's correct, you are not even halfway to the chambers that have the glyph of the red gin. You sit down and eat your rations that you carried with you. This lets you reset any cliches that have been reduced in combat.
Nice.
So,
our fun-loving merc is back up to 3.
The tunnel opens in a large chamber that's covered in thick, shaggy mold. You cover the coin briefly, and you see that there is a strange glow in the room, so you do not need your coin here, and you draw your sword instead. The room is full of skeletons. They're not human, though. They might be dwarves.
Or halflings!
And the skeletons also have mold on them, and they're covering up the only doorway, which is a large iron door, black with rust. Two skeletons are slumped against it, and the phosphorescence around them makes your vision blur. You have a distinct feeling of dread at the thought of moving the skeletons, because you think they don't want to be moved. So you can go back along the corridor to search for another exit, or you can try and move the skeletons aside.
I thought the corridor had, like, collapsed behind us.
Yeah, but you've been walking for already another half hour.
Move the skeletons.
Yeah, let's move the skeletons. If we get in a fight, we get in a fight.
The skeletons are dead. The door is just an obstacle. So you swat away the skeletons, no problem. You touch the door, and sunlight surrounds you. You're standing on the banks of a grassy hill with huge towering clouds filled with battling griffins. Around you is a party of dwarves. They don't look very happy to see you. The end. And a strange one.
Whoops. We went back in time.
I'll give you a take back see on this one, because I did write down the number you got. Because I feel like we're close enough.
All right, let's go back.
Let's go back. That would have been like we got transported back in time or something.
Yeah, that's basically what just happened.
Okay. All right, let's go do a take back.
Go back to look for a different exit. Pull out your coin again. You're sure that you've checked this area before, you found nothing. But this time you look a bit more closely, and you run your fingers along the wall while you go along. And as you do this, a door slides open, exactly where you didn't expect it to.
Whoa, that's exactly where I didn't expect it. I should have known it was going to be there.
So, your choice is here, because you can tell beyond the door there's a smoother tunnel and you can hear running water, as you can go through the door or return to the glowing room, which you already know what happens there, so there's only one choice.
Yeah, let's go down. I like how the dwarves weren't happy to see us. They're like, God damn it, another one.
You can feel that you're getting closer to Patricia as you squeeze through the various tunnels beyond this door. After a time, you come to a large corridor, and this is where the symbol on your map is drawn. You found the mark of the red djinn. More than that, this tunnel is illuminated by a sorcerous radiance and has been swept clean. So you draw your weapon and forge ahead.
Yay!
The walls of the tunnel are glowing softly. You estimate that the masonry here is less than 2 years old. And you're kind of like, how did they get money to build this thing? And you can feel that the ring is trembling in anticipation in your pocket. So off you go down this straight tunnel, and you come to another large door made out of oak. There's a small grate in the door. It's maybe 5 feet from the ground, and you can see a guard's back behind the door. There's another noise coming from inside, and you can't help but notice that the guard is wearing gray. A backstab seems obvious here, but there might be other guards waiting on the opposite side. So you're going to sneak closer to the door to see if you can hear some more stuff. And please roll your halfling burglar cliche.
Do you like to roll, Corey? 9, 4, 13.
All right, you succeed. Guard hasn't moved. And roll again. This means you've basically pressed your ear against the door.
10.
Okay. You just succeeded.
Yay! Talent rating 9, I guess.
You can only hear the distant tapping of the guard's foot. Yeah, he seems to be alone.
Backstab time!
So you are going to risk that backstab.
We sure are.
Alright, you can roll either against your halfling burglar or fun-loving mercenary. The fun-loving mercenary one is more difficult.
Halfling burglar!
It's not by much.
Give more dice as a halfling burglar.
For all the good they did us. 7.
You still succeeded.
Yay!
This was a really low difficulty roll if you use that cliche.
Yeah.
The guard gurgles slightly and says something a lot like glurfed before slipping quietly to the floor. You clean your blade, replace it carefully in the scabbard, and open the door. The guard has nothing of value save a dagger. You may take this if you wish.
Yes, take it. Why not?
All right, write that down. You see that he's smiling broadly, and you want to give him just a little bit more dignity, so you mold his face into a frown. So now you are in a small, stone-cold, dark chamber. There's just one torch mounted on the wall. There's two exits, and you can hear the voices of more guards through one on the left, so you opt for the other one. And peering under the door, you see feet tapping listlessly, and you hear some humming. You recognize that humming. It's Trisha.
Yay!
You found her.
Yay!
You barely contain your excitement. But how are you going to get to her without making any noise? And you're pretty sure that she's going to start shouting derisively at any guard who'd open the door, even if the quote-unquote guard is you. Or maybe not. So right now you can try to whisper to her, or you can just open the door and hope she'll stay silent.
Whisper, maybe?
Yeah, I think whisper. She's totally going to shout. Okay. That's what I'd do.
What do we roll?
You're not rolling anything. You just whispered to her.
You're just going to a pee.
You say, psst. You wait for an instant, and the feet stop tapping. You go, psst, again. And after a while, she kneels onto the floor, lays down, and she's staring at you from under the door, and she's like, Lucas? And you're like, shh! So she nods, and then she shows you that her hands are chained up.
Now we get to try to probably unlock this door, but we're terrible at it.
So you press gently on the door, which is open from the outside. Fortunately for you.
Yay.
You slip into the room. You fetch the keys off of the guard who was at the other chamber. And you free her chains. And she's like, Lucas, I knew you'd be here. And she gives you a big hug. And you Aww. Blush and you're like, it's good to see you too. I had a heck of a time getting here.
Mm-hmm.
But before you can tell your full story, you hear a noise like the sound of a mountain being cracked in two. You also hear distant screams and a hot wind blows against your face. If you have more than one sword, you can hand one to Patricia.
Oh, you're the dagger.
And you look up and the stone ceilings are beginning to crack. You hear a bunch of people screaming. A roar mm-hmm. follows and the ring on your hand is shining brightly and Zim shows up. But now Zim is the size, he's growing to the size of a man.
Mm.
So you're pretty sure all of this is the Red Genie's doing. They've lost control of him. And Zim screams at you, Lucas, wear the ring. Together, we are invincible. So, you can wear the ring, or you can let Zim fight his own battles.
Wear it?
Yeah, let's wear the ring. I still think he's an asshole, but... Even though he's lied, heck, he could still be lying. Still, I think it's the most reasonable thing to do.
So you put the ring on your finger, the room goes black, and you are stuck in a hideous limbo of palpable darkness, and your own reality is slipping through your hands like smoke. You try to look around, but everything looks distant, and you cannot hear any noises. Trisha points to the door and motions for you to follow. But you don't feel inclined to follow. You don't feel much at all. You have other places to go, other things to do. You walk away down a long black tunnel, leaving your life behind. Zim can have it, after all. He has you and everything you ever were. If he survives this battle, he even has Patricia. If anything interesting happens, you won't be aware of it. The end.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
Good job, guys.
Thanks. Hey, we freed her. That's the important part.
So that's the end of this adventure. If you had not put on the ring, basically you and Patricia would have fought another guard. Mm-hmm. Zim would have fought the Red Genie.
Mm-hmm.
You guys would have left the collapsing tunnels. All the Ring of Thieves would be dead. Mm-hmm. And you'd be off to have other adventures.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So that was our example of a good adventure.
Yeah, that was fun. I noticed that we were probably less entertaining to listen to because we weren't complaining quite as much.
Yeah, well, I'll edit out a lot of the silences and lapses here, but...
Yeah.